His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
Hello there, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, we will talk about the MTV Video Music Awards. We will also discuss why the city of Chicago doesn't think that rock and rap are fine art. Demi Lovato gets sued by sleigh bells, but before all of that, let's talk about Frank Ocean. And follow me on this one. I think you got some snippets that I'm missing out on. So on August 19th, alternative R&B singer Frank Ocean released a new visual album called Endless, which streamed exclusively on Apple Music. A day later, he released another new album, Blonde, released exclusively on Apple Music. It is believed he released Endless to get out of his Def Jam contract because he needed to record another album. So with Endless out of the way, he could then release Blonde as an out-of-contract independent album.
Hmm.
Now, reportedly, Lucian Grange, president of Universal Music Group, Def Jam's parent company, is looking to cease exclusivity deals with streaming services due to Frank's partnership with Apple, which seemed to initially benefit Def Jam, but then bit them in the butt. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if all of that conjecture is true. The other thing I would say is that there, and I'm not sure you were implying this, but there may not be a connection necessarily between the idea of trying to get out of contract and the exclusivity issue. Because here's what's happened with the exclusivity that's been widely derided by commentators, right? You know, mm-hmm. the usual suspects who write letters and stuff. But the basic thing is that in order to see or hear the Frank Ocean, the initial Frank Ocean, you had to sign up for Apple Music. Now, you could get a 3-month trial. I don't know if you can get that if you're not a member of iTunes already. I don't think you could. I think you had to be iTunes, and then you had to enter, because I had to enter my passwords, and then they said, would you like 3 for free? And I just wanted to see it or hear it, and so I said, okay, sure, which means they'll just bombard me with emails, or they'll automatically renew me, right, using my credit card, mm-hmm. which they have my credit card. So theoretically, Apple can charge me for anything whenever they want to.
Right.
And I do get weird charges sometimes. But the thing is that what's happened is that the exclusivity has led to incredible piracy. The piracy on his stuff right now is running at like an extraordinary rate, because apparently or logically, many people don't want to sign up with Apple.
Yeah,
they don't want to
another thing to subscribe to.
Exactly. I mean, you had to do Tidal if you wanted to participate in the whole Beyonce thing. And then Kanye. And then now I'm going to get into another service. I mean, this whole thing, and I think maybe what Universal is saying is, we don't want to do this anymore, because what's happening is the artist may get this huge bump by this, you know, he's dropping the record, exclusivity, et cetera, et cetera. But what's happening is, as soon as that goes up there, it's pirated. And all the people who don't want to sign up for Apple Music or Spotify or whatever the exclusivity is with, they just go and they find it. And then there will never be any follow-on. In other words, Universal will see nothing. It's over. So you might as well have released the record for free, you know, and had some sort of stake in his touring, which they may have. I mean, I don't know, and merchandising and whatever.
See, back in the day when they did this with MTV, it made sense.
Sure.
It's okay, I can only see the video on MTV for this 2 or 3 week span. But for albums, it almost just discourages you or makes you want to pirate it, because when Kanye released his album, I thought, I really want to listen to it, but I'm not going to subscribe to Tidal.
Right, right.
So I didn't listen to his album for however many weeks because I didn't want to subscribe to Tidal.
Right, and if you subscribe to the notion that most people under 25 do, that music should be free, if you can't get it legit, quote-unquote legitimately free through Spotify or whatever, then you're going to go the pirating route. Because mm-hmm. this isn't exactly like walking to the corner and buying a badly shot version of a new movie. I mean, you're just mm-hmm. you're getting the same quality files as everyone else is getting.
Yeah.
And no one cares. They've also done recent studies that say nobody cares about the quality anyway. So the whole thing is, unfortunately, this has been going on for some time. It's been a problem. And now it's really come to a head. And I understand that artists and managers liked this exclusivity thing. And maybe it got them some money, too, right? It got the artists some mm-hmm. money. Sure. But at the end of the day, this is yet another... This is taking a hammer and knocking out another support under the entire music industry system. And when I say mm-hmm. music industry system, I don't just mean those fat cats sitting in offices in Manhattan or Los Angeles. I mean the whole system. Because if all of a sudden there's... The only music that you're going to listen to is actually pirated, then we're back to Napster. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten nowhere with it. And yeah. you know, and it's interesting to me because I mean I've been on all sides of this thing extremely ambivalent about the whole thing. But I gotta say that when I watch this, it's almost like someone stabbing themselves. You know, I mean you just sit there and watch it and you go, like, my God, how many more times are you gonna do that? You know, it's like one gigantic beast just stabbing itself over and over and over again. And at first it was like, oh, it's the record company stabbing themselves by trying to sue people for illegal debt. And then it was, you know, the RIAA, and then it was Metallica, and then it was always blaming it on one person. Now you have to say, you got to blame it on the entire thing. They are all sort of just constantly trying to undermine their own business. And I mean, I don't know how much you'd have to pay me to work in that business. Because
I'm so curious as to what the next 5 years is going to look like.
So is everybody else.
Because I would hope that when an artist puts out an album, you could listen to it in one place.
Right.
But I'm also afraid that if an artist puts out an album, there's one of 20 places in which you can listen to it.
Well, it reminds me, I don't want to get too deep into this, but it reminds me a little bit of when online music sales, and we're talking about actually physically buying CDs through the mail, right? When mm-hmm. that first started up, every distribution company, the major distributors, decided to set up their own sites. And I remember Warner Brothers was really proud about this site that they had called The Dave, named for their head of distribution, Dave Mount. And the Dave was a place where you could go, for instance, and get a Green Day record. The problem mm-hmm. was that they didn't sell the Offspring record also. So you were expecting people to go to one site to get the Green Day, and they also wanted the Offspring, so they had to go to another site, and they also wanted Rancid, they had to go to another site, and they also, it went on mm-hmm. and on. So I said at the time, and I'm like, I even talked to them at Warner Bros. I said, you guys, this is insane. This isn't going to get you anywhere, because if the consumer can't go to one place to get it, eventually they're just going to get frustrated with the whole process. Mm-hmm. So we've now gone back to that, which is incredible, because we're talking about, we're talking like 20 years ago. We've gone back to there. And I think that they're going to have to figure something out. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I don't know what can be figured out. I don't think there is anything. I think this is all going to settle into a very sort of provincial, scattered kind of music buying, music consuming, music, you know, experiencing process. I don't see anybody who's going to be able to like get something together that everything's going to coalesce around. I just don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I agree with you. I like to see the next 5 years because, you know, and artists have such a terrible relationship with labels now. I mean, it's one thing if you didn't really trust your label that much and you always want to keep an eye on them. And it was like, always like, yeah, well, I don't know. But now it's just, they don't even talk to them anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I know from personal experience that, like, there are times when the head of a record label has said, I haven't spoken to the artist or their people in 6 months. And these are superstars. Because they don't care anymore. They're just like, we're going to do what we're going to do. We don't care.
Yeah, I think inevitably all music will be free.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
at some point in time.
It almost is now, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a good story. Britney Spears has teamed up with the American Red Cross and CrowdRise for a fundraiser contest. Every $10 you donate to Louisiana Flood Relief will enter you into a drawing where you could win tickets to this Sunday's VMAs and meet Britney Spears. You could also win Britney's outfit that she'll be performing in or an autographed album. In case you're wondering, Britney Spears grew up in Louisiana, and Taylor Swift also donated $1 million to flood relief efforts.
Wow. Very nice.
Did you enter this contest?
No, I haven't entered it. I don't think I can win because I think there are certain restrictions.
Yeah,
you know, you're like the family or the extended family of someone who works at Viacom or whatever, you can't do that.
Can I enter?
No. Well, yes, you can. Unless they told you when you left that you couldn't enter any contests.
No, they didn't. Yeah. I'm going to win her outfit and then give it to my friend Emmanuel as a birthday present.
There you go.
The noise indie rock duo Sleigh Bells have sued Demi Lovato, claiming that her song Stars, which appears as a bonus track on the deluxe version of her 2015 album Confident, borrows from their 2010 song Infinity Guitars. Let's take a listen. Now, when Demi's song was released last year, Sleigh Bells tweeted, "Flattered you guys sampled Infinity Guitars in Riot Rhythm for Stars, but we were not contacted. Gotta clear those."
Mm.
I hear the drum fill.
Well,
but isn't that like a James Brown kind of thing? Remember how every hip-hop artist uses the same drum beat,
right?
The funky drummer?
Right. Yeah, I mean, didn't the Demi Lovato camp, whatever that consists of, didn't they deny that there was actually any samples at all?
I don't know.
I think they did. They at least their initial denial was, well, we couldn't have sampled it because there are no samples. Okay, so in other words, they created this stuff, you know, out of the air, as opposed to just sort of like taking it, manipulating it, putting it on something. So, I mean, this is a big problem, and this is going to continue to be a big problem. Everyone thought that maybe the Zeppelin case, well, people still think that maybe the outcome of the Zeppelin case will make it a lot harder and a lot less interesting to try to sue people for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, again, I go back to the notion of if you have any doubts about whether or not you've borrowed something, the best thing to do is to have your people call their people and work something out.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're, but now, being fair, they might not have heard anything. I mean, they might not even, you know, it might never have occurred to them. So it's hard to say. But in general, what's going to happen is there's going to be a heightened awareness of this. So when you go into the studio and you start working on something, everyone's going to say, "Now, where did you get that from?" Or that sound, mm-hmm. or that sounds a little bit like this. We better look at that. But the other thing, of course, is that you know, lots of advertisers are being told now, don't use any hip hop music at all in anything you do. And lawyers will tell their clients that do not use hip hop because we don't know what's in there, because we have no idea. And you take like the Frank Ocean we're talking about, that apparently has all sorts of crazy stuff in it. You know, I mean, all sorts of things that they manipulated and put together. And so that's just a minefield. But it's going to be something that I think producers are going to really have to pay more attention to.
Yeah, the victim in this is Demi Lovato, because she probably has no idea what anyone's talking
about. Exactly.
She's like, "I was just singing. I don't know. I didn't make the song."
Right, exactly.
Cook County, the county that oversees the city of Chicago, is looking to make local music venues pay 6 years of back taxes. Venues that are under 750 in capacity are exempt from paying a 3% tax if they are selling tickets for, quote, in-person, live theatrical, live musical, or other live cultural performances, unquote. The county defines live music and cultural performances as, quote, any of the disciplines which are commonly regarded as part of the fine arts, such as live theater, music, opera, drama, comedy, ballet, modern or traditional dance, and book or poetry readings, unquote. Guess what? Rock, rap, country, and DJ sets do not qualify as fine art. A hearing will be held in October to determine if it indeed is.
So, those specific genres are specifically excluded?
No, those are what constitute fine art.
Well,
live theater, music, opera, drama. But they said, rock, rap, country, or DJ sets don't qualify.
But aren't those, isn't that music?
It is music.
Well, that doesn't seem like it's going to work. I mean, I'd love to hear I'd love to hear the arguments. Like, well, you said music, right? You did say music.
Yeah, I mean, music is in there.
Right, so I think
they're going to have a DJ spin a set, and then they're going to bring people to argue why it is fine art.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the word fine is the word that's a problem. But the word fine, the word fine was probably put in there a long time ago. And now I can understand maybe a distinction being made between live performances and those which are simply playing records. In other words, mm-hmm. if you go to a bar or a club and they're playing music, but no one's performing, that's a very different thing than if there's a performance that you paid an entry fee to, right? Right. So I know that type of distinction is made in some cases. But the distinction that you were going to start talking about what constitutes, you know, music, that's going to be a hard sell. I wouldn't worry about that one if I were them.
Yeah, a lot of the small club owners are worried because, like I just said, they're going to have to pay 6 years of back taxes if they can prove that rock, rap, country, and DJ sets are not fine art.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would suck. You get a letter in the mail like, oh, you have to pay 6 years of taxes. What?
Yeah, are you kidding me? And also, like, let's face it. I mean, lining up against that probably will be the Better Business Bureau and because nobody wants those places to go out of business. I mean, we have enough problem in Chicago keeping things open, man. I mean, you don't want to start closing stuff down.
I know. Yeah. So that all goes down in October. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, Lyle and I will break down this year's MTV Video Music Awards.
This is an outrage, because Spike is the director that has just... I'm from Switzerland, okay? Let me just tell everyone that. And since I was a small boy, I had dreamed that Spike would win this, and now this has happened. And I just want to tell everyone that this is a farce, that I had all the ideas for Star Wars and everything.
We are back on The Week in Music. Jim Scheer with Lyle Presler. This Sunday, August 28th, at Madison Square Garden in New York City, the MTV Video Music Awards will take place. There will be live performances from Rihanna, Britney Spears with G-Eazy, Nick Jonas with Ty Dolla $ign, and Future. Only four performances?
I think there's probably going to be more.
You would think, right?
Well, you know how it goes these days. Some people want their stuff to be secret, quote unquote secret.
Why?
But that's part of that exclusivity concept. I don't know. I mean,
get rid of it, man.
They've all got these ideas now that they can somehow control this whole beast, and I don't know where they're getting that from. But you know how it is. All this misinformation being thrown out there, so that you know you don't know, and then all of a sudden the album gets released or the
video. I would to sit down with one of those executives and say, break it down for me. Give me the metric telling me why it's good to not promote this thing months in advance.
I don't think it's executives, man. I think it's the artists themselves.
Really?
I don't know that for sure. I can't speak to that for sure. But I don't know. My sense of it is executives, whether they're TV executives or record company executives, want as much marketing and promotion as they could possibly get and are never happy.
But I also think, maybe I'm an old man, but you and I were talking a few weeks ago about the VMAs, and I said, oh, are they taking place in LA? And you said, no, they're taking place in New York. And I said, where? And you said, Madison Square Garden. So how can it be? I live in New York City. I take the buses. I take the subways. I watch TV. How did I not know the VMAs were happening at Madison Square Garden until 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, that I can't explain. That's pretty
wild. Is that me?
Am I
an old man?
Well, I haven't seen anything, but then again, I don't get out much. So,
and then there was a Subway poster last week, but it was just the Moon Man, and it said Sunday, August 28th, VMAs.
Oh,
I don't
know
who's
actually,
the host. I don't know who's performing.
Yeah, I have seen the generic ones. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen the generic ones. You're right about that. But, you know, a lot of that has to do, and you work there, so you know, a lot of it has to do with not being able to confirm acts early on in the process.
I know, but what about a host?
Well, that's true. Where's the host? Yeah.
But I'm also, I also came of age in the golden age of the VMAs.
Yes.
Where the award show kicked off the fall music season. Mm-hmm. It was basically music Super Bowl. So, I'm still living in the 90s, I guess.
So what do you think of the lineup? So such as we know.
Well, 15, 20 years ago, we would have had 10 performances lined up
mm-hmm.
with the biggest names in music. I mean, Britney Spears will be cool. Rihanna will be cool.
Well,
I feel like Nick Jonas.
Wait, isn't Rihanna getting like a Vanguard award?
Yeah, she's getting the Vanguard.
So she's probably going to perform more than once. Or her performance is going to be longer. So, like, it's not going to just be one song.
Right.
Right.
Because I think Justin got 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And Beyonce got 13 minutes. Maybe Rihanna will get 14 minutes.
Yeah, she's going to She's going to want 14 minutes at least.
Oh, I know.
I got to get one more than so-and-so did.
But once again, no rock acts on the bill, but that's been going on for the last 15 years, so that doesn't surprise me.
And the only rock acts out there that you could book are largely considered to be things that are too old, I think.
Well, what about 21 Pilots?
Yeah, if you consider them to be a rock act, I guess that could be something.
Okay, so let's go through
but
the
they
categories.
Were on last year. Weren't they on last year?
They were, but it was part of a Samsung integration.
Oh, okay.
So they didn't get to properly perform. I think they did it with ASAP Rocky.
Yes, that's right.
So they've got three huge hits, so I would love to see a 21. Maybe they will perform. Who knows? But it's not being publicized, and the show's on Sunday. So for Video of the Year, there is Hello from Adele, Formation from Beyonce, Sorry from Justin Bieber, Hotline Bling from Drake, and Famous from Kanye West. Who do you see walking home with the Video of the Year award?
Well, who's going to be sitting in the audience?
That's what I said. So Beyonce's nominated for 11, so I would assume Beyonce's in the house.
Yep.
Adele's not performing. She's not listed, so I would assume she's not showing up to the VMAs.
Yeah.
And I think she's on her tour, so I don't
think
she's going to
be there.
Oh, yeah,
well, if she's on tour, then no. And that's all sold out everywhere, so she's not going to cancel any dates on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kanye, I heard, is going to show up, possibly, and do something.
Okay.
So he may be in the house, and Drake may be in the house.
I think that's an odd. I think it's tough to pick between those, although I would toss the Adele one out. I mean, it's a big song, no question, but like video, like I don't see, from a video standpoint, I don't see it really competing.
Well, but they never vote on the videos.
I know, and that's what's so ridiculous about it. I remember when Sinead O'Connor won for that one where she's just walking.
Yeah.
I remember sitting there going like, are you kidding me? Like, this is, I mean, from a video standpoint, this isn't video. This is just someone walking.
I'm still bitter. In 1994, Crazy, was it Crazy from Aerosmith?
Mm-hmm.
Crying or Crazy beat Sabotage.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just a run-of-the-mill music video.
Yeah, run-of-the-mill. Absolutely. You could have, like, probably every video director had that video in their portfolio.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's a treatment.
So I think Kanye West is too scandalous to win Video of the Year.
Hmm.
So I'm going to say Formation or Hotline Bling.
Yeah, I'd probably go with Formation.
And it will be interesting if Kanye is in the house, say if Justin Bieber or Adele wins, does he get up on the mic and say something? We're all expecting it.
Yeah, but because you're expecting it, he won't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he shouldn't.
Right.
So this also makes me feel like an old man. Best New Artist. To me, none of these stand out. Like in 5 or 10 years, I don't see any of these being the next Katy Perry or Maroon 5. There's Designer, DNCE, Zara Larsson, Lucas Graham, or Bryson Tiller. I mean, Zara Larsson had that, I will never forget you.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. No, I know it well. I know it well. I know both the Lucas Graham. I like the new Lucas Graham song better than the other one.
Yeah, I do too.
Even though it's still like, it's a hard knock life. I mean, God, please. Can you?
But am I wrong about this category?
Is that best new artist?
Do any of these artists have lasting power?
I don't think so. I mean, all that stuff, you know, it's incredibly difficult to predict that. I heard a guy, a local radio legend, Richard Neer, talking about how an A&M rep came in and played him The Police and said to him, these guys are going to be as big as any, you know, band other than the Rolling Stones you can ever name from England. And Neer was like, yeah, you know, I mean, I like it. It's cool. but there's just no way. And he goes, God, was I wrong? You know? So, you know, I mean, you can't predict that stuff. It's just not possible. But I'm not jazzed by those names.
Yeah. There's no, because DNCE, I feel like Joe Jonas, this is just a project he's going to do for another year or two.
Right. And then he'll do something else. Absolutely.
Yeah. So for best pop video, Hallel from Adele, Formation from Beyonce, Sorry from Justin Bieber, Wild Things from Alessia Cara, one of your picks of the week earlier this year,
yes,
and Into You from Ariana Grande. Who's going home with best pop video?
You know, but once again, aren't three of those the same one? I mean, you know what I mean? It's like sort of...
Yeah.
And then Formation's nominated again and again and again and again in other categories, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
Yeah, she has 11 nominations.
Yeah, at a certain point, it's like, okay, so you're basically telling me this isn't pop music or rap music or rock music. This is music. Music. This is actually what the original term popular music referred
yeah.
to. Popular mm-hmm. music as opposed to classical music. Music for the masses is what it is. It's music for the masses. So yes, it is all pop music.
Isn't Hello more pop friendly than Formation?
Absolutely.
So shouldn't Hello win
so.
A couple
yeah.
awards?
Yeah, I think
yeah.
that should win.
So let's give the best pop video to Adele.
All right, we've done it.
Best rock video. This always cracks me up because rock is low on the VMA totem pole. Missing You from All Time Low. Adventure of a Lifetime from Coldplay. Irresistible from Fall Out Boy featuring Demi Lovato. Victorious from Panic at the Disco. And Heathens from 21 Pilots.
I would like to see Panic at the Disco win, personally.
It's a catchy song.
I think if you listen to the lyrics, they're like ridiculously subversive. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I love that line, like eyes like broken Christmas lights. It's like so, like it's such a great image. And it's mm-hmm. it's got so much menace to it, despite the fact that it's actually like sort of, yeah, 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 yeah. You know, I was just listening to it earlier today. I mean, I was driving and it came on and I thought, you know, when he sings those lines, you know, let's turn up the crazy. I mean, I think it's great, you know. So mm-hmm. I would hope that they would win. 21 Pilots, fine. That'd be fine. The rest of it, it's all right.
I don't hate this category.
No, it's better than I would have thought it would be.
Oh, yeah, over the last few years, because the one year Lorde won.
That's right.
Thought, well, she doesn't even have a guitarist or a bass player. How does she rock? So I mean, maybe you could make that argument for 21 Pilots, although they have that rock vibe.
They do. They definitely have a rock vibe. I would if you showed them to me and you said what would you use to describe them if you have a narrow number of
exactly.
You'd say rock, yeah.
Yep. So, and then as you alluded to earlier, Rihanna will be presented with the Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award. Do you think she deserves it?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
I mean,
who else is on the list to get a Vanguard, do you think? That hasn't received. Did Britney Spears didn't receive a Vanguard yet, did she?
No. No.
It seems like she should get one
point. The Red Hot Chili Peppers should.
They didn't get one yet?
I don't think so. I don't think it's been around
yeah,
long.
Yeah,
I don't
they
think it's been around
definitely enough. Should.
I mean, just if you just think about it from the standpoint of who made all these videos that have become sort of, if I were going to show you 10 minutes of clips of famous videos to give you an idea of what the medium is all about, the Red Hot Chili Peppers mm-hmm. would definitely be in there.
Wait, let me... Well, no, you know what? They did win it.
Oh, they did? Okay, never
mind. In 2000.
Never mind. But so how long is
Red
it,
Hot
how
Chili
long
Peppers, U2, Duran Duran, Hype Williams. Oh, Britney Spears. She won in 2011.
Oh, okay.
Justin Timberlake won in 2013.
Right.
Beyonce won in 2014. Kanye West won it last year, and Rihanna gets it this year.
So who's left?
That's a good question. I mean, do you give it to Christina Aguilera?
Hmm. Or did Mariah Carey win it?
Let's see. No Mariah Carey.
So
you could give it to Mariah Carey.
That's a possibility.
Yeah. Okay. Hmm. Beastie Boys got one.
They did?
It's sitting on top of the refrigerator in the recording studio.
Oh, right. That was the one where was that the one where MCA gave the sort of disjointed speech about the Middle East?
He possibly, but I also I get that one confused with the Woodstock one.
Right. No, I know there
where
was...
Where Ad Rock basically talked about the elephant in the room. He said, listen, guys, you can't be raping girls at Woodstock. And everyone in attendance was like, now it got awkward. I'm like, no, it needed to be said.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That, I mean, that seemed a little bit more specific than the whole firing missiles into the Middle East thing, personally. But
yeah. Okay, so the MTV Video Music Awards happening this Sunday night, August 28th at Madison Square Garden. 20-minute subway ride for me, and I didn't even know that 3 weeks ago. Lyle, will you be watching?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. I haven't missed a VMA since 1990. Oh,
I've definitely missed most of them, but I will watch it.
Birthdays. Who's celebrating a birthday today?
Oh, my goodness. I don't have my piece of paper with me, but...
Well, you know who celebrated a birthday yesterday?
Yeah, Julian Casablancas.
Yeah,
and,
keep going.
Let's see, who else?
Kid Meevan, drummer from Deck of Jack.
Okay.
And someone else?
Kobe Bryant.
And Mr. Lyle Pressler.
And I did, that's right. Yeah. There we go.
Did you do anything?
No, actually. I didn't. But we're deferring it. There was just too much other stuff going on. We're going to defer it for next week sometime. But I'm not a big birthday person. So, I mean, you know, I'm just not personally. But I will tell you, I do know that the guitar player for Sepultura's birthday is today. There were only three, I think, of any consequence. But the other one that I thought was interesting was. It's his name, Mason Williams, the guy who wrote the song Classical Gas that every guitar player plays at some point in their life. It was a huge hit. But what's interesting about him, it was just a giant hit. If you want to just look up Classical Gas, it's just an instrumental guitar thing. But in those days, an instrumental in the 60s and 70s, an instrumental could take over the charts, you know, and like become a number one song. And mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about him was he was also a comedy writer. And he wrote for the Smothers Brothers. And for SNL, briefly.
Wow.
Which is kind of weird because he was
a
serious musician. I mean, he wasn't like a comedy guy who did like a novelty song. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He was actually a really talented musician, but he was also a comedy writer. So very interesting. In fact, he came up with the famous Smothers Brothers bit, Pat Paulson for President. So, they used to run, they ran it every year, you know, I mean, it was a recurrent thing. So, he came up with that. So, that was interesting.
Okay.
And I'm not giving out their ages because I don't have my piece of paper, so that means they're all good. They're all 25 years old. Forever.
No, wait, was there someone else?
There was someone else, but I don't remember who it is.
Okay. Well,
it was definitely a light day. Yeah.
Yeah. The other person
from yesterday was Dean from Stone Temple Pilots, the guitar player.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I think
yeah.
He's 54, maybe.
You guys share a birthday together.
We do share a birthday.
Did you ever party together on your birthday?
No, never met either of those guys, Julian or Dean. Never met them.
Maybe next year.
Maybe
There's
next
always
year.
Time. Yeah. So the number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 this week, Closer from the Chainsmokers and Halsey. That's called the Lyle Pressler Song
bump,
of the Week.
The Lyle Pressler
yeah,
bump.
Yeah. The number one album on the Billboard 200, Suicide Squad, the album. The number one song on iTunes, Closer from the Chainsmokers and Halsey. The number one album on iTunes, no surprise here, Blonde from Frank Ocean. And the number one song on Spotify, You Got It, Closer from the Chainsmokers and Halsey. We are going to take a quick timeout, and when we come back, we have our music picks of the week. So baby, pull me closer in the backseat of your Rover that I know you can't afford. Bite that tattoo on your shoulder. Pull the sheets right off the corner of the mattress that you stole from your roommate back in Boulder. All right, Jim Shear and Lyle Pressler back from that quick timeout. Now it is time for our music picks of the week. And as we said before the break, your pick of the week last week was Closer from the Chainsmokers and Halsey. A week later, it's the number one song in the country.
Well, you know, you've heard about the Madden curse. You know,
yeah.
You're a football player and you're cover of the Madden game. You get injured horribly or some terrible thing befalls you. Well, this is the Pressler bump, unfortunately. But the thing is, I think there, a strong argument could be made that I'm not in front of the herd. I'm with it.
Well, You don't have to tell anyone that.
No, I don't. I'll leave it up to you to decide.
Yeah, if you get paid, I'll be like, man, this guy's a genius. Yeah. Every song he picks goes to number one.
There you go.
Yeah, we could start a business. So my pick of the week, I picked it because I want to talk about it, but the more I listen to it, I really like it. Hardwired from Metallica, the opening track off their forthcoming album, Hardwired to Self-Destruct. And I believe that album comes out in early November. So, any build-up, or should we just play it and talk about it afterwards?
Just play it.
All right, here it is. Hardwired from Metallica. I like it. Yeah. You know what I like about it? The lyrics kind of remind me of something that a 16-year-old kid would write.
Right.
But I kind of like it. Who was ever in the sessions with him, they said, just go back to the beginning, man.
Well, you know, it's...
Pretend you're writing your first song.
You know, it's interesting. I read a very, very well done and interesting review of the Prophets of Rage concert, the kickoff of their tour. It was in Virginia, and the writer was the one of the music critics for the Washington Post, Chris Richards, who's writes interesting stuff.
Can I stop you for a second, Lyle?
Yeah.
By you bringing up a Prophets of Rage story, that must mean they are ranking somewhere high on your carometer.
Well, yeah, but what I thought was interesting to your point was that he talked about Rage Against the Machine and specifically about their politics and their lyric, and he was trying to make the point that, you know, when you listen back, at the time, it was like, yeah, you know, what better time than now, yeah. But then later on, you grew up, you kind of went like, you know, that's just sort of puerile, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's just sort of, and plus the fact then what starts to creep in is the notion of like, yeah, these guys are singing this, meanwhile they're using every single major business tool at their disposal. Now, you can make the argument that they're doing that because they're being subversive, you know. Mm-hmm. So, in a sense, it's a little bit like the Metallica thing. I mean, you know, it's sort of James going back and writing, you know, these sort of just, you know, lyrics that are, that, like you say, it's like something a 16-year-old would write. And that doesn't make it bad, by the way. And Chris Richards wasn't saying that that made them bad. It's just interesting how your perspective can kind of change on things. But I really like the song. And I am by no means the biggest Metallica fan in the world, and don't really care, frankly, if they ever write anything else. It doesn't matter to me, because anything I was going to listen to is already really old, you know.
Nothing really matters. Yeah, you're even quoting
exactly,
Metallica songs.
Yeah, so, but I like it. I think it's cool. I mean, I think it's refreshing to hear it, you know? And
I always crack up when people say they're going back to the well, and I thought, well, they went back to the well for their last album too.
Yeah,
I
see,
seems like
I don't buy that
journalism, because every time Weezer puts out an album, people say they're going back to the well. I'm like, no, Weezer have gone back to the well for the last four albums.
Well, and essentially, I hate to say this, but the only band that's on the radar that doesn't do that is Radiohead. They don't go back to the well, and we wish they would.
We want them to,
but they don't. But they willfully don't. But you see, I think it's very difficult to make an argument that says that a band is going back to a well. It's their well.
Yeah.
They've been drinking out of it for a long time, forever.
It's still in their, it's in their backyard.
Right.
Now, maybe they went to the faucet for a couple albums, but we know that the well is still there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
we kind of coordinated our music picks of the week this week.
It ended up happening that way because when you took Metallica, I said, you know, there's a corollary to that. And that was...
I actually wanted to talk about these two earlier in the show, and I thought, no, I'll save it because Metallica's my song pick of the week. And then when I found out yours, I thought, well, problem solved.
Right, there you go. Now, so it's Green Day. It's their new song, Bang Bang, off a forthcoming album. And again, I heard the same thing, you know, they're going back to the well. They're writing in the old style. And when I heard it, I thought, really? So let's play it.
Okay. Bang Bang from Green Day. Now, I like this one too.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I like it like I like Green Day songs. And when I say that, what I mean is, again, I'm not the biggest fan. It's like when I hear a song from Green Day, if I heard this song, I go, oh yeah, it's Green Day. And it has the elements that I, some of the elements that I like about them. It has some of the elements that, you know, I don't really care for, but that are nonetheless a part of who they are. And so again, people said, oh, they're writing, you know, like the old days. I'm like going, what? When did they ever stop doing this? I mean, the miracle of Green Day is that they've been able to do this for so long and be successful at it. Because because you have to understand, like, we're talking about at least one generation of people that have changed. You know, I mean, like, you know, the people who were listening to Dookie are in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
So they've got new fans along the way by doing largely what they've always done.
It's amazing how many new fans they got off of American Idiot.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Like younger, because that stuff was being, I think, played on MTV. I don't know if TRL was still around then, but it was being played on MTV. So they got a lot of younger fans off of that.
Right.
I like that this song isn't, it doesn't have any rock opera breakdowns.
Right.
That's what I appreciate about this song.
Yeah, that's true. And it is straightforward. I mean, straight ahead, straightforward. And, you know, and the lyrics are sort of, again, they're sort of this vaguely subversive commentary on American foibles, you know, and they do sound like, you know, they could have been written by an 18-year-old, but that's fine, you know. I mean,
and I like this song more if it's not part of a concept album.
Yeah, well, I always like things more.
I just want a collection of Green Day songs. You don't have to have a concept,
right? I agree with that.
Yeah, I'm happy with both of our.
Yeah,
picks
we'll
of the
see.
Week.
We'll see how they go, because as you mentioned, you know, rock music just doesn't really, I mean, it's always popular, but it doesn't ever it doesn't ever take over anything. It doesn't expand beyond its beyond the group.
Yeah. So speaking of going back to the well, we'll talk about that, Lyle, when we come back on The Week in Music with Lyle and Jim.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants, putting suckers in fear, making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion. Overpowering over the competition. I'm towering, wrecking shop. When I drop these lyrics, that'll make you call the cops. Don't you dare stare. You better move. Don't ever compare me to the rest that'll all get sliced and diced. Competition's paying the.
All right, everybody, Jim Scheer with Lyle Presler. Time now for Ask Lyle.
Ask Lyle.
So we were talking about going back to the well. Metallica writing a bread and butter Metallica song, Green Day doing the same. On Saturday, Mr. Lyle Presler, punk rock legend, picked up his electric guitar and shredded for 6 songs at MCA Day in Littlefield. So my question for you is, how do you think it went?
I thought it was great. I mean,
yeah, me too.
I mean, I will say that we were a group of people who never even met, never played together, and literally had 2 1-hour rehearsals. So it was rough around the edges. It was a little sloppy at times. We had some sort of technical, if you will, issues as well, which you always do. But I have to say that what I remember about it is not playing it. You know, that won't be what I remember. What I'll remember is just the audience that was there and the people who were there and the enthusiasm, which was just absolutely palpable. I mean, it was. I spent a lot of time milling around. I didn't, you know, because they had sort of asked us, which I thought was very, very the right thing to do. Say, don't hang out backstage. Okay, it's a logistical problem with this many people anyway. But come, you know, be out there, be around. And I did that. And frankly, I probably wouldn't have done that in other circumstances, because it just can, you know, it's a little bit annoying. But But I hung out. I looked at all the artwork. I listened to what people were saying. I talked to a few people, and there was all different types of people. I mean, you know, it was just an incredibly wide variety. There were kids who I felt terrible for because they were being exposed to terrible language, but a lot of them had big, huge earphones on for protection. But I thought that everybody seemed to be really in the spirit, and that was what was great about it. And I thought that's what it would be, but I wasn't really sure how it would go. And all the other performers, the sound people, I mean, everybody was so nice and so positive, which you rarely get. I mean, if you play shows, what happens is that, there's people you know, people you don't know. Some people are friendly, some people are standoffish. There's a little bit of sort of underlying competition going on. There's that kind of stuff. At this, there was just none of that. It was just like everybody's there to be there for that thing. And while I would not have wanted to take what we did, Jim, into, a club tomorrow morning or tomorrow evening,
right.
I wouldn't have wanted to do that with an audience that's going, what the hell are they, a Beastie Boys cover band? But it was perfect there. And being there was exactly the right place to do it, and I had a great time.
Yeah, I thought it went well. I watched back the video, and I enjoyed watching you play guitar.
Well, that's good.
I thought to myself, why did it take 26 years, man?
Well,
because you did do the one song, as we spoke about last week, with the vaccines on the summer stage, but I feel like after you do one or two, then you get warmed up,
Oh, no, that was one of the weirder experiences ever from a playing standpoint, because I came in, I'd never met them before. We ran through the song one time in soundcheck. I went, hung out with them or whatever. Then they went on, started playing. I'm standing by the side of the stage waiting. Middle of the set, I run in, I play the song, I leave, and I felt like this is just the oddest thing I've ever done, because it was
after one, you want to do another.
Yeah, and it does take a while to get warmed up. Once someone could argue that I never got warmed up on Saturday, but it's neither here nor there. But it's definitely a different kind of experience. I mean, Jess, if you're go back and answer your question, why in so long? It's because really the opportunities really aren't there that don't strike you as being sort of silly. Like, I mean, I never had the desire to go down and play punk rock karaoke or anything like that.
Right.
That just seems sort of silly. I mean, I'm happy to watch it, whatever, let other people do it, but I didn't feel like doing it. And then, I wasn't a member of lots of, other little bands. Like, Brian Baker was a member of so many bands. He can, he'll go to Black Cat one night and play with the other guys from Government Issue, or he'll go and do a Dag Nasty thing, and that's all fine, and that's great. I don't have that kind of background, so therefore, there's not that many opportunities to do something. And this, and as you know, Jim, the only reason I agreed to do this really was because of what it was, because of the nature of the event itself. And I thought, this could be a good thing, and it did. It turned out to be a great thing, and I thought you were great. Everyone I talked to commented on how great you were and how versatile you were.
That's good.
You were doing one thing, you were doing another, you were emceeing it, you were directing
traffic. Well, I felt bad. Yeah, I felt bad because I guess I was sort of the production coordinator unofficially. Like, it was my job to be backstage and say, hey, you're on in 10 minutes. You need to get back here now. So I felt bad that we didn't get to have a band huddle.
Right.
Like, when Minor Threat would play or the Meatmen, would you guys have a little band huddle before you went on?
It's funny. I was thinking about that the other day, and I don't think we did.
Okay.
It wasn't one of those.
So you didn't go to bed on Saturday night saying, damn it, man, we didn't have a band huddle.
No. It wasn't. We never had one of those things where we would put our hands in and go, whoa, everything like that. I understand people who do that. I think it's fine. And I think if that's part of your ritual, that's great. I just more recall, I can certainly recall episodes where we would be fighting right up into the moment the lights went on. You know what I mean? screaming at each other, and then, oh yeah, here we are to perform. Or in the case of the Meat Men, going, where's so and so?
But you never got together and said, man, I love you guys. Let's give it all we got tonight.
No, I mean, after the show, you can sometimes hey, that really worked out, or that really sucked, what were you doing on that part? Or did you see the girl with the big, you know, but whatever. But I mean, there was very rarely any kind of pre-show thing again, except for wondering, you know, why so-and-so's, you know, still in the bathroom or something. You know, so but everyone has their own way of doing that. And I think, as I told you, you know, with Minor Threat especially, it got to the point where we were just such a machine, you know, that mm-hmm. there wasn't, we didn't even really do proper sound checks. I mean, we didn't really do them. We would just get up and test the line and that'd be it. Like, we rarely played songs. If we played anything, we played like fake reggae songs, you know. Mm-hmm. Ian never sang during sound check. It was never once you got to a certain point, you knew what you're going to do. It didn't vary very much, you know. The set list would be there and you just did it and that was it. So
my last question, I actually edited a 5-minute recap of MCA Day, which all of you can see online. So go to YouTube, type in MCA Day 2016. You'll see my 5-minute recap of a 5.5-hour event. Will you watch it? Because I know you say that you don't go online and you don't read anything that's written about you.
No, I try.
Will you watch video?
I don't know. I haven't. Okay. I would always watch somebody else, you know, but mm-hmm. I guess I fall in a category of, like, I don't know whether is it Al Pacino or Dustin Hoffman or even both of them who've said, I've never seen one of my movies. You know, I've never watched it.
They said that?
Oh, yeah. And there are
That's crazy.
A lot of actors will tell you that. A lot of actors will say they never watch the movies because they're for varying reasons. But one is, like, They know what they did and why they did it. They don't want to second guess what they did. That's one reason. Another reason is some of them just can't stand to see themselves on screen. They just can't stand it. It took me a long, long time to be willing to watch any of the older stuff. And it's not like I sit down and watch it. But like if I see it, I don't have a knee-jerk reaction to it. And the reason why, and I've tried to describe this to people over the years, but like if I see a picture of myself in Minor Threat or a video, I mm-hmm. don't connect on a visceral level with that person.
It's a different person
it's
altogether.
It's a different person. I mean, I know it's me, obviously.
Right.
And I can see certain things, but it's so disconnected from where I've been, you know, in the last 30-some years that I don't have that feeling. Now, if I watched what we did, I would definitely have that feeling. I would say, oh, yeah, no, I know what that is. Okay.
That was 4 days ago.
Yeah. So I think there's a certain thing in me that says, well, also, I mean, I wouldn't enjoy it the same way someone standing next to me watching it would. You know, it wouldn't give me pleasure to watch it. And I don't mean that in kind of this, you know, gruff kind of way. I just mean I wouldn't have the same attitude towards it. I'd be looking for what happened there. Why did that happen? What was mm-hmm. I doing there? What were you doing there? What was so-and-so? I would just look at it differently. And while I'm sure I could be persuaded to enjoy it, it would be a different kind of enjoyment. You know, mm-hmm. it's just a different kind of enjoyment. Like, to this day, if I happen to see a little Minor Threat footage, I just go like, wow, you know, look at what Jeff's doing, man. Listen to how that sounds. Like, you mm-hmm. know, I see it as, oh, now I get why people were excited by it who were in the audience, because it's cool, it's exciting, it's fun, it's fast, it's, you know, it's tight. And so I see it on that level. I don't see it on from the perspective of I'm Lyle Pressler in Minor Threat. I just don't see it that way anymore. And because we never saw the stuff to begin with, I didn't have that period where it would have bothered me, you know. It's like I only saw it years and years later. So,
well,
I don't know.
Well, that's why you do so well on this show, because you're a critic.
Exactly.
Kyle Pressler, a critic 24/7.
Critic at large.
Hey, if you do watch this video though, mm-hmm. there's probably like a 5-second snippet of A Grade on Mojo.
Okay.
You've got the swagger in that 5-second clip. Okay. So if you only watch 5 seconds,
I will,
of A Grade on Mojo.
I will agree to watch the recap, because I'd like to see the other things too.
Okay, so right now, Lyle and I are going to work on our Led Zeppelin cover band, and we'll bring you the report on that next week. So for Lyle Pressler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
So long.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.